fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off in Kampala, where reporter Magumi Davis Rakawinj has this spicy profile of Uganda's new national football coach, the French tactician Sebastian Desabre.
The new Uganda Cranes coach was appointed by the Federation of Uganda Football Association, OFUFA, after the resignation of Mirutin Mitchell Slurovic last July over unpaid wages. Desabre, who signed a 3-year contract this year, says he got it all to take Uganda to the highest heights.
The first objective is to qualify in the second time in the AFCON consecutively. In the AFCON, we have a good start with a win in Cabo Verde, but now we have two crucial games in September and October against Tanzania in double confrontation against Lesotho. To go in AFCON is my personal objective, but also the objective of federation.
Desabre has 8 years experience in Africa, having coached teams from Cameroon, Tunisia, Angola, Morocco and Egypt. He has also previously coached in United Arab Emirates and his native France.
I believe in this project. This team has a potential, and I think I can improve. I saw a lot of video. I take some information about this team, and its average age is 25.
So far, the Sabres' results haven't been very impressive, after he managed only one draw in the just-concluded CHAN Championships. The Uganda Cranes also struggled against Soccer Miners, Principal and Sao Tome in their 3-1 win and played to a goalless draw with Malawi in friendlies this week. But Desabre remains optimistic his players will do better in future engagements. He says he will work with local clubs to improve the quality of players.
To improve the level, we need one or two big names outside the country to give a motivation and an example for others. Maybe all big teams in Africa have some players, big players in play in the better championships in Europe, for example.
Uganda's soccer team captain, Dennis Onyango, who plays for the South African Premier League side and former African champions, Mamelodi Sundowns, says his teammates are quickly adapting the new coach's mode of play.
We're trying our best to know the style of play and to adjust quick as possible, because we need to deliver. We need to get the results, and we need to play to the style of the coach. And I think the boys are getting there day by day. By the time also we play against Tanzania, we'll be playing to his strength and knowing as much as possible that that's his style of football, and to get the results.
Just like his national coach, Onyango, who has been voted Africa's best goalkeeper, also says Ugandans should expect nothing less than qualifying for the AFCON Championships next year.
For anyone or any team to achieve something, you need to believe. It has been our struggle before to qualify for the Nations Cup, and we did that. I think at the moment we're one of the strongest teams in Africa on the continent. In East Africa, I think we are the best at the moment, and we've tried to secure our name and fight for our position all the time. If you look at the rankings, the African rankings, I think we're in the top 10 or 12. So it shows that we've done well. Everyone is looking forward for our next challenge, because we need to go back to the Nations Cup.
Uganda is ranked 78th out of the 211 FIFA member associations and 17th in Africa. The Cranes will play at home against Tanzania on 7th September in the AFCON qualifiers, and then play Cape Verde later in November. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Magumi Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Magumi, and I hope you have a sporty weekend. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Meanwhile, another Frenchman, Sebastian Migne, has left his post as head coach of Congo Brazzaville's national football team, citing poor working conditions. The 45-year-old Migne signed a 2-year contract in March 2017. He replaced another Frenchman, Pierre Lechantre, in Brazzaville. During his 1 year in charge, Migne won only one match out of 7. a 2-0 victory over Guinea-Bissau on Sunday. More African football news. 6 African referees have been selected by FIFA, the sport's international governing body, for June's World Cup in Russia. They are Mehdi Abid Sharef of Algeria, Malang Diadou of Senegal, Bakari Papa Gassama of Gambia, Gehad Grisha of Egypt, Jani Zikaswe of Zambia, and Bamlak Tesema Weyesa of Ethiopia. In addition, FIFA chose 10 assistant referees from Africa. The referees and the assistants make up a total of 99 officials selected for the World Cup, which kicks off June 14th in Moscow, where Russia will host Saudi Arabia in the opening match. Another big international sporting event begins next week in Australia, the 2018 Commonwealth Games. More than 6,500 athletes from about 70 countries, including 18 African nations, are expected to participate in the Games, which go from April 4th to April 15th in Queensland on Australia's Gold Coast. Reporter Samson Omale joins us now with Commonwealth Games news regarding Ghana, South Africa, and Kenya. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. With just 5 days to the commencement of the Games, Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Sports and Heritage, Rashid Nchesa, has confirmed that all local and international alliances have been settled for athletes representing Kenya at the Commonwealth Games. This was after the payment of the athletes' allowances became a subject of controversy a few weeks ago and threatened the participation of the Kenyan athletes.
I can confidently confirm to Kenyans that all the participants, the athletes, have received their local allowance and their international allowances. When I was being vetted, I was very clear. I said that I will not allow the athletes in this country to be frustrated.
Elsewhere in South Africa, 800 meters world champion Caster Semenya will be the flag bearer for Team South Africa during the opening ceremony of the 2018 Commonwealth Games in Australia, which begins on the 4th of April. Caster Semenya has promised at least 2 gold medals when she takes to the tracks in the 800 and 1,500 meters.
The main goal is to win 2 gold. Obviously now the main thing is to focus on what I'm doing, just focus, being disciplined and being healthy, that's the most important thing.
Although South African athletes to the Games have set for themselves podium finish in order to better South Africa's fifth position in the overall medals table from the last edition.
We're under a lot of pressure, but hopefully we'll perform. I'm confident that we'll come with gold medals.
As a South African women's hockey team, we are going for those medals. We've been in situations where we get so close, we can taste it, but that medal has just eluded us.
And from Ghana, Raphael Botsuyo Nkebe, 3-time Paralympian, has been appointed as the general captain of Team Ghana for the 2018 Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast, Australia. Nkebe is regarded as the most senior of all the athletes at the Games, with a lot of experience in international competition. And on to football. The South African Football Association says its president, Danny Jordan, will continue leading the association despite rape charges against him by a former ANC Member of Parliament, Jennifer Ferguson, 2 weeks ago. This position was adopted by SAFA's Extraordinary Council meeting. Pobolang Govindasamy is the chair of SAFA Ethics Committee.
We support very strongly women in their struggle against all forms of abuse and violence. Having said this, however, we note that there have been, over a period of 6 months, a large-scale media attacks by some of the media, Honorable President.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In cricket news, the fourth test between Australia and host South Africa began Friday in Johannesburg. Joining us now with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Yes, after a tumultuous week, the two teams lined up on the field of the new Wanderers Stadium and shook hands as a sign of their commitment to sportsmanship. The match comes amid high drama and fallout from the Australian team's involvement in a ball tampering scandal that rocked the sport. Fans who arrived for the start of the match shared their reaction.
I think it's bad, but ultimately it's going to be good for cricket. We needed a moment like this to clean it up.
Unfortunately, they've done it, and now they're suffering the consequences of it. I think it's negative towards the series. It did some damage, but hopefully today we'll see the start of a good test match.
Well, the thing is, if you're gonna do match fixing, I mean, it basically amounts to match fixing because you're changing the condition of the ball to get an unfair advantage. So all the players involved should have stiff bans. Bancroft, I think he's young. He needs to, you know, be given a chance to redeem himself. Warner, he was the main instigator there, so I think it's fair his ban. Steve Smith, he's still young. He can still try and redeem himself as well. But they need to root it out and see if there were anybody else involved, because I doubt it's just those three players.
Guys have been punished, so let's just hope that they bring their A game to the field today, because we came to see a good cricket match against two great teams. So let's hope both teams put forward their best teams on the day.
Cricket Australia teammates Steve Smith, David Warner and Cameron Bancroft confessed to deliberately altering the ball to gain advantage during last week's third test against South Africa. The trio have since been banned from the sport. Head coach Darren Lehman has announced his plan to step down after the final test. On Thursday, David Warner briefly spoke to the media after touching down in Sydney.
As you can understand, it's been a tough and emotional time for my wife and the kids at this present time. You'll hear from me in a couple of days. At the moment, my priority is to get these kids in bed and rest up and let my mind be clear so I can think and talk to you in a couple of days.
Do you have plans to
deal with
this?
Thank you, guys.
In response to the fallout, the International Cricket Council set in motion plans to review sanctions for poor behavior. ICC Chief Executive David Richardson says the proposed review could, quote, save the spirit of the game.
First of all, we need to look at the code of conduct. Are the offences that are set out in that code appropriate? Secondly, are they graded according to seriousness correctly? What are the elements of each code, of each offence? For example, one man's banter is an insult to someone else. One man or woman's way of showing his passion is a send-off in another man's definition. So we need to more clearly define each element of each offence so that the players are absolutely clear. No ambiguity should exist as to what will constitute an offence and what will not. And then thirdly, we need to look at the range of penalties that are appropriate for each of those offences.
David Richardson says he's seen an uptick in the number of incidents of unacceptable behavior among players from all teams, ranging from sledging or verbal insults, send-offs, dissent at umpires' decisions, and even a walk-off.
Only now recently, with where people are or players seem to be going to more extraordinary lengths, using mints on the ball, sandpaper, as we've recently seen, I think it has highlighted the problem for us. And I think the danger is that we just ignore it rather than stepping in now and really drawing a line in the sand and saying, no, that is cheating. Let's deal with it properly and appropriately.
Richardson says the ICC will consider ball tampering a more serious offense, raising it from a level 2 to a level 3. Now on to tennis. American Sloane Stephens has reached the final at the Miami Open in Florida, beating Victoria Azarenka of Belarus 3-6, 6-2, 6-1. After the match, Sloane talked about what it took to claim victory.
Obviously, to get to a semifinal, you're doing something right. You're playing good tennis. So I knew that if I just, you know, fought and just stayed in it, kept it close, that I would have my opportunities. And you know, in the second set, or after when I called my coach out at the set break or whatever, I just was like, okay, well, I didn't really do anything wrong. Like, I wasn't playing terribly. I had a lot of errors, but I didn't feel like I was just not in the match. So I knew if I just kind of stayed with it, I would be able to get my opportunities, and I did.
This is Sloane's first Miami final, and she says getting there was a hard-fought battle.
I had to fight, and I had to play some of my best tennis today, and I thought it was a really great match. Some of you might not agree, but I thought that we played some really good points, and I'm excited. I'm happy to be in the final. I think anyone would be, and hopefully I take that good tennis into Saturday's final.
Sloane says the string of losses she suffered after winning the 2017 U.S. Open helped her turn things around.
My heart was there, but my body physically was not. And I think that was the most important thing, getting myself back in the best shape that I could be in, making sure that I was pain-free, that I wasn't going to get injured again, and making sure I was taking care of myself. And that was the biggest part about ending last season and then going into this season. I knew that I didn't have the greatest off season, so for me, if the two matches that I lost the first part of the year in Australia, not a big deal. Like, if you're not 100%, you can't expect much. And I think now I took the time to get myself together. And, yeah, I guess there's been some good results.
Sloane's final match will be played on Saturday. She'll face French Open winner Jelena Ostapenko of Latvia. On the men's side, two semifinal matches will get underway on Friday. First, American John Isner will play Juan Martín del Potro of Argentina. Following that, Pablo Carreño Busta of Spain will go head-to-head with Alexander Zverev of Germany. I'll bring you results from final matches on the men's and women's side next week. Whew, happy Friday, Sonny. I'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend too, Gwen, and thanks for your reporting on the show this week. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. That was my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. In pro boxing, the world middleweight title rematch between Gennady Golovkin and Saul Canelo Alvarez, scheduled for May 5th in Las Vegas, Nevada, remains in jeopardy after two positive drug tests by Canelo last month. So says our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta.
Remind you, Canelo failed two drug tests, February 17 and February 20. The Boxing Commission has been put in a position now whereby they don't want to look like they are favoring Canelo. Remember the last fight with Canelo and Triple G, where the Nevada judge gave the fight to Canelo? The fight fans have still not forgotten that. A lot of people are really, really mad, and they believe that any decision the Boxing Commission makes will favor Canelo, and that puts the commission in a tough spot.
Canelo tested positive for clenbuterol. Can you talk about that drug for people that might not be familiar with it?
It's used for shedding fat and boosting cardio. People also use it to cut weight and maintain muscle. Canelo is not the first boxer to test positive for this banned substance. An NFL player by name Duane Brown from the Houston Texans, he went to Mexico. He ate 10 hamburgers and two big steaks, and he tested positive for clenbuterol. And then NFL ended up suspending him for 10 games, and he appealed it. And he showed them a ticket for these 10 hamburgers and two big steaks. Guess what happened? NFL let him go.
So it could be contaminated beef that produced that positive drug test.
Sonny, we have to be very careful. We have to give Canelo the benefit of the doubt because, one, he may have also consumed this tainted meat. And you can then destroy his career because of the mistake he made. Everybody's calling for 2-year suspension, 1-year suspension, ban him from fighting. They forget that Canelo is the grand poobah of boxing. Canelo is the king of pay-per-view. The Mexican fans are the number one fans. If you ban him for 2 years, that will destroy the game of boxing, Sonny.
Canelo scheduled to appear on April 10th before the Nevada State Athletic Commission, either in person or by telephone. If things don't go his way, Namdi, and the fight is canceled, what economic impact will that have on Las Vegas?
Oh, Sonny, it's going to be bad. I mean, this morning I canceled my own flight ticket and my rooms at the MGM Grand. The city itself will lose close to $250 million. Talking about hotel rooms that have been booked, you're talking about air tickets, you're talking about each of those casinos in Las Vegas prepared to do closed circuit for the fight, betting, gambling. Even the Uber driver, Sonny, will feel this cancellation. So the city will lose a huge amount of money.
Well, Nambi, what's your sense? What do you think will happen on April 10th?
A lot of people believe because of the money involved that the fight will go on. I'm telling you now, from what I know, from the people I've talked to in the game, the fight May 5th will be canceled.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. In National Basketball Association news, 24-year-old Cameroonian star Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers is expected to be sidelined up to a month after fracturing his eye socket. Now, it was kind of a freak injury. Embiid accidentally butted heads with teammate Markel Fultz during a 118-101 win in Philadelphia Wednesday night over the New York Knicks. Embiid also suffered a concussion. The 76ers have had a resurgent season, and Embiid has been a big part of it. He's averaged almost 23 points and 11 rebounds a game for the 76ers. And Joel also earned his first All-Star selection, as well as consideration for the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year award. Joel Embiid missed his first two NBA seasons with foot injuries, and last season he played only 31 games because of knee problems. On Sunday, the 76ers clinched their first playoff berth since 2012, but Embiid's latest injuries could jeopardize his availability for Philadelphia's first-round playoff series. More NBA injury news. Los Angeles Lakers guard Isaiah Thomas will need 4 months to recover from arthroscopic surgery on his right hip. The Lakers announced Thomas's prognosis after the surgery on Thursday. Thomas will be a free agent by the time he recovers from the procedure, but he's expressed interest in staying with the Lakers. Los Angeles acquired Thomas earlier this season in a trade with the Cleveland Cavaliers. A two-time All-Star guard, Isaiah Thomas averaged 15.6 points and 5 assists in 17 games with the Lakers. Well, U.S. college basketball fans are excited about the Final Four weekend coming up. We'll have the Final Four in both the men's and women's National Collegiate Athletic Association Division I championship tournaments. Ladies first, the Final Four will be played later Friday night in Columbus, Ohio. And the matchups: the powerful University of Connecticut women, they've dominated women's basketball here. They'll take on Notre Dame in one semifinal. And the other will be between Mississippi State and Louisville. The winners of those two games will play on Sunday for the national title in women's college basketball. The men will play their Final Four on Saturday in San Antonio, Texas. And the matchups: surprise package Loyola Chicago will meet Michigan in the first semifinal on Saturday. And that will be followed by the second semifinal between Villanova and Kansas, also in San Antonio. And let's give a quick sunny side of sports shout out for Villanova guard Jalen Brunson. He was named the Associated Press Men's Player of the Year in U.S. college basketball. And that wraps up the March 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A recent survey supported by the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, shows that for as many as one in three girls, their first sexual experience is forced or coerced, which also places them at an elevated risk for HIV infection. Statistics also show that almost 1,000 young women are newly infected with HIV on a daily basis, and that they are up to 14 times more likely to be infected with HIV compared with young men. PEPFAR is committed to changing these statistics, especially with its DREAMS partnership that helps girls develop into determined, resilient, empowered, AIDS-free, mentored, and safe women. Through this public-private partnership, the United States is empowering young women to become change agents for themselves, their peers, and their communities. We are inspiring and assisting them to write their own success stories about how they stayed in school, benefited, along with their families, from economic strengthening, and addressed sexual and gender-based violence, said Ambassador Deborah Birx, who serves as the U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator and U.S. Special Representative for Global Health Diplomacy. The U.S. government has invested more than $750 million in DREAMS programs to reach over 2.5 million adolescent girls and young women with services and support. In the 10 original DREAMS-supported countries, nearly two-thirds of the highest HIV burden communities achieved a 25% to 40% or greater reduction in new HIV diagnoses among young women, with new infections declining in almost all DREAMS intervention districts. There is still a long way to go. Millions of girls and young women experience physical and sexual violence every year. This violence often starts early in life, so PEPFAR is expanding its developmentally appropriate HIV and violence prevention programming for girls ages 9 to 14 to prevent sexual violence, delay becoming sexually active, help them understand consent, and encourage them to make healthy choices. This year, as we mark PEPFAR's 15 years of saving lives through American generosity and partnerships, said Ambassador Birx, we celebrate the important progress we have helped girls and young women make through our work in more than 50 countries.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. This week, we discuss the various tactics that the Kremlin uses to wage political warfare in Western democracies and how to combat it with Alina Polyakova, Senior Fellow for Foreign Policy at the Brookings Institution. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. This week, we examine the Me Too movement, which aims to combat the widespread prevalence of sexual assault and harassment, especially in the workplace. We'll talk about the origins and significance of the movement in the United States and around the globe. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.